Hey everyone, welcome back to this week's episode of Wild and Unprotected. I'm your host, Koji Somalde, and here's my co-host, Ethan Lehman.
Hey everyone.
On today's show, we have a special guest by the name of Peter Clark from Tampa Bay Watch, where we talk restoration here in Tampa Bay.
Cue the intro.
The classic.
We actually were joking about setting up an OnlyFans account.
Here's to us all swimming through the shit and making more sense of it.
Wild and unprotected. Planet Earth, we can't neglect it. Nature sexy. We need this place, so please respect it.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Wild and Unprotected. On today's show, we have a special guest by the name of Peter Clark. He is the president and founder of Tampa Bay Watch, right here in my very own backyard. Peter, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Koji. Really looking forward to it today.
Happy to have you on the show, Peter.
Thank you.
You know, just jumping into it, let's go ahead and give the audience a little bit about what you do and who you are, Peter.
You bet. I am the president and the founder of Tampa Bay Watch. We're an environmental nonprofit program that work on the Tampa Bay estuary here. And what we do is we get community volunteers and a lot of kids involved with the hands-on restoration of Tampa Bay. So we're a group of scientists that organizes restoration projects around the bay. And then we invite different community groups to come out and actually do the work itself. And that's important because there's a lot of people in the Tampa Bay area that really want to help out. They want to make a difference, but they don't necessarily know what they can do to make that difference. So we provide that conduit by organizing the project, and upwards of 8,000 to 10,000 community volunteers a year help us with our coastal restoration projects.
That's amazing. You talked about, you know, this effort being kind of a coordinated joint effort between scientists. Obviously you have to get that group together, but it started with you. So let's talk about your early career and, you know, what you had done before, Tampa Bay Watch, so we can have a better understanding of why Tampa Bay Watch became a thing.
And it's kind of a fun story looking back over 40 years now, but I used to work for the government. I worked for the Tampa Bay Regional Planning Council and headed up a group called the Agency on Bay Management. And this was a great group. It brought together all the people that were involved with the bay, whether it was commercial fishing, port authorities, other nonprofits, local governments, and tossed the problems of the bay into the group. And they had no jurisdiction whatsoever, but they could write letters. And because of that, they were able to make significant change in legislation that really helped to bring on water quality in the bay. But when I was working for the Agency on Bay Management, I wore a suit and tie every day, carried a briefcase, and more I started to do projects after work and on the weekends with fishing groups and scout troops. And these projects were designed to create habitat in the bay. And it was quickly apparent that there was a real need within the Tampa Bay community to do these kind of projects. So when my wife was pregnant with our first son, I left my government job and set up a desk in our house and started the Tampa Bay Watch nonprofit off. And it's been growing a little bit each and every year. This is the year that we celebrate our 30-year anniversary.
Wow, that's incredible. Congratulations on 30 years. I'm sure that it has felt like it's flown by for you, but you know, in those 30 years, I know this is probably a question that is a definite yes, but do you feel like you've left to do something more meaningful? And left, I mean, left corporate America to do something more meaningful.
You know, absolutely. You know, at my last job, it gave me a tremendous amount of experience, and it also helped to introduce me to the people that were making a difference around Tampa Bay, and that provided the foundation that we were able to create the nonprofit and have have had the significant growth that we've had. But writing reports was very interesting, and it helped provide the science for the Bay. But my real heart was getting out to do actual projects and being able to move dirt, plant salt marsh, build oyster bars, really see the difference in the in Tampa Bay each and every day was really where my passion lies. And it was also very apparent that that's what the community wanted to do, too. We had a lot of media back in the early 1990s that talked about the problems of the Bay, and that helped to mobilize people. And the Tampa Bay Watch has really stepped into a void by being able to create these projects and getting the people involved with restoring the Bay. And very early on, we realized that if we wanted to do these projects during the week, we needed to start reaching out into area schools. So quite early, we started to network with the schools to grow salt marsh grasses for coastal restoration projects. And the schools were very involved. It helped to provide them with an opportunity to work side by side with area scientists to do these restoration projects as well. So we grew that program. It's called Bay Grasses in Classes, to about 18 middle and high schools all around Tampa Bay. And once we were well entrenched within the school system, we were able to acquire a piece of property out by the mouth of the bay in order to construct our marine center out in Tierra Verde. And the first thing we wanted to do was have an educational platform out here where we could start to bring the schools out and develop a marine science program. So one couldn't work without the other. It was very important early on that we worked with the schools. And now we're able to bring the schools out and do educational programs from our Tierra Verde facility. And I know we're going to talk about the Discovery Center as well.
Yeah, we got quite a bit of that coming up in the later portions of the episode. But I also wanted to call out kind of a funny pun that I don't know if you intentionally made it. You were growing the program, and it's a grass program. That's pretty good.
Yeah, they go together. As a nonprofit grew, so did our opportunities to grow salt marsh and oysters. We'll have to work that into our next round of logos here at Tampa Bay Watch.
Yeah. Logo reformation is always a fun process. You get to be super creative. So can't wait to see that. let's dive into kind of the beginning of Tampa Bay Watch. Clearly, you're incredibly passionate about this project. And it's grown as a nonprofit over the last 30 years. But let's talk about that formation in the beginning.
Yeah, we worked early on with a group called Coastal Conservation Association. And they were a group of local fishermen that were very passionate about recreational fisheries. So fishing clubs and scout troops understood the importance of community service, and especially CCA in returning habitat back into the bay. So it was very easy to acquire our early volunteers by working with fishing clubs because they could see the linkage, they could see the cycle, and they understood that without habitat, they won't have the fish that they need or they like to catch recreationally. So that's grown quite a bit with Tampa Bay Watch, and we still work with the CCA group that we started with over 30 years ago now. Still very active in our restoration projects out here in the Bay.
That's awesome. Yeah, CCA has been one of those organizations that you see, you know, doing giveaways and, you know, like mobilizing the community out here to come out and volunteer. And I know that with Tampa Bay Watch, we had a quick discussion before this, Peter, where, you know, you talked about the amount of volunteers that you've recruited over the years. What was that number again? I think it was
well over 100,000 volunteers now, and a lot of adults, a lot of families, but a lot of kids as well by working with the different school districts in our area.
Yeah, that's impressive. That's a mighty feat there for being able to actually say, hey, we have full hands on deck to help out with, all of these restoration projects. I mean, that's huge. Can you talk about a little bit of that impact, you know, within the community and how Tampa Bay Watch has really, you know, piggybacked that that community portion of it. I know there's, you know, the Discovery Center, which we'll get into. But like even early on, like you said, with over 18 schools, very early in, you know, Tampa Bay Watch Foundation, that's a lot of traction there early on. Can you talk about the impact of that?
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's great, Koji, that you recognize that quite often people see the amount of oyster bars that we build or acres of salt marsh returned into Tampa Bay. But I've always felt that just as big a difference is being able to educate our community or get our community involved with these projects. Tampa Bay Watch can only do so much, but if we're able to reach out into the community and educate our kids that are the next generation, then those gains that we've been able to make in Tampa Bay will be more solid, and they'll be able to make the right decision as they grow up to be voting adults as well. So yes, it's important that we restore the habitat that we've lost in the Bay over the last 100 years or so, but just as critical is getting the community involved and making sure that they have a stewardship role in protecting and restoring the resources in the Bay.
It's critical to have that understanding too, you know, especially at a young age. You know, I think it's a little difficult with, you know, younger kids especially to establish that kind of foundation of why it's important. But getting them started in the ways that you guys have already kind of implemented with, you know, the marsh grass program and things like that, where you make it fun for them. And then as they grow older and they see the community impact, they can take that fun lesson that they learned and, you know, look back to that and say, oh, okay, you know, now I'm starting to see why this is important. So it's really cool to kind of see your programs meld with the impact all at the same time and allow your program to grow. It's awesome.
Yeah, I really like that, Ethan. And just to take it one step further with our education programs out here in Tierra Verde and the Discovery Center, more than half the school field trips that come here are with Title I schools. So a lot of these kids haven't been out on a boat before, and they haven't even been to the beach before as well. They literally live within a 6-block area around their house. So they haven't had a lot of the opportunities that we take for granted. So quite often, this is their first experience with getting out on the water, seeing the marine environment, those things that we've taken for granted. And it's wonderful. It's wonderful to get these kids out on the boat. Quite often, they're literally terrified for the first 15 minutes. The shark is going to eat them. The boat's going to sink. But with the rest of their friends in the class that have had these kind of experiences, they're able to relax and look around and see the dolphins and catch some of the fish in our nets and see what a beautiful world it is out there and realize that it's not terrifying, and it's critically important that that they experience it more in the future as well. So it's great to be able to work with Title I schools. But as you know, a lot of the kids in general are very involved with their cell phones and games. So they're not getting out in the environment like they once were. So being able to provide educational outreach out into the environment is important for all ages right now as part of our education component. So it's critically important, and I know that our board of directors in the Tampa Bay Watch community realizes the value of hands-on community-based education, and that's why those programs have really grown so much, especially in the last 5 years or so.
That's so cool. Something that just came to mind here to me was thinking about the impact that it has on the adult volunteers. You know, you see things kind of through the eyes of children, and I think it really can inspire you. And I can only imagine what it's like being on the boat for the first time and seeing a child, you know, really embrace the water and marine ecosystems and just see it kind of with that delight, that like almost twinkle. You know, I could imagine that the volunteers also, you know, gain a lot from that as well.
Yeah, the volunteers are energized as well. And it is a real joy. I know a lot of our staff really enjoy working with the kids. You see it in our restoration projects. A lot of the volunteers are families. where parents want to bring their kids out to expose them to the bay. And this is an opportunity that they can do. It's kind of like taking your kids fishing, only you're taking your kids to plant salt marsh or build an oyster bar. And then they have that ownership. They have that stewardship of the resources.
Before we get too far into this week's episode, I wanted to give a quick shout out to our sponsor. Our sponsor this week is you, our listeners. How? Well, now that we're a nonprofit, the donations that we receive go directly towards funding our shows. Want to help or need more information? Visit wildscapeproduction.com/donate to support the show. We're so thankful for the support. You make the show exactly what it is. Right on. Yeah, that's one of many ways to do it. I mean, before we hit record on the show, I was telling you that myself and Brian on our team, we went and this is a great time to segue into the Discovery Center. We went to the Tampa Bay Watch Discovery Center right here on the St. Petersburg Pier. And, part of me felt like a child, going and experiencing what you guys have, what the organization has built on the pier. One thing that I got to experience firsthand was, kind of piggybacking what you said, bringing the youth onto boats and out onto the water and showing them firsthand, the ecosystem that you're aiming to protect and the ecosystems. But for those out there that don't have access to that, or, maybe your schedules aren't lining up, just right here on the St. Pete Pier, you can go see a fraction of that and go look at some of the things that Tampa Bay Watch has in the Discovery Center. And my experience too was seeing kids run through there with their parents, like super excited to go touch a sea urchin in the petting tank and, go see the snakes of the estuary. those were new too. I mean, the banner on the front of the windows looks incredible. And that's the slogan is Snakes of the Estuary. I thought that was really interesting. but yeah, can you dive in a little bit about the Discovery Center and the intentions behind, putting it together? And also, I'm curious, how did you score getting it on the pier?
Yeah. So Tampa Bay Watch created about a $5 million facility here on the shores of Tampa Bay, where we've been running our education programs from since 2005, 2006. And as you can tell, it's become very, very popular. Just about every single day available in the school year has a field trip coming out. And during the summertime, we'll do 8 or 9 weeks of summer camps. And this last season, summer camps out here filled up in 12 minutes time. So 8 weeks of summer camp took 12 minutes to fill online. Just incredible. So we quickly realized that we needed an area to grow to because it was so popular. And when the city of St. Petersburg was looking to redevelop the St. Pete Pier, there was a lot of discussion about what the new pier was going to look at. And we helped the city kind of through some charrettes around town. We helped define that one of the things the community wanted to see out there was some kind of a marine education platform. So when the next design came out, we solicited the city to become the managers of that facility, and through a competitive process was selected to create what is now the Discovery Center out there. So what that did was it provided Tampa Bay Watch with two things. A facility where we could now tell the story of the restoration and protection of the Tampa Bay Estuary, so that whether you live in Seminole or Ohio, you could see that the things that you do in the backyard really make a difference, and you can make a difference in your environment locally. And that was what the exhibit hall in the Tampa Bay Watch Discovery Center was designed to do. But it also gave us room to construct another classroom which was closer to Title I schools that we're trying to reach, and gave us the opportunity to really provide another platform to bring more schools in and run our programs. As part of the Discovery, we have a eco vessel in downtown St. Petersburg, and that's set up to take kids out on the bay in the morning. And then it provides eco tours in the afternoon for the public to come out and pull some nets through the seagrass beds in the bay, or go around and visit the bird islands at Coffee Pot or Little Bayou around the bay. And they're even doing snorkeling trips out there as well now. So there's a lot of different platforms that really help to grow the Tampa Bay Watch organization. And I had mentioned earlier that for many, many years, we just, you know, kept our heads down. We drove our pickup trucks and Carolina skiffs, and we were involved with truly the restoration projects around the bay. And not a lot of people heard about us. So we had often heard that we were the best nonprofit that nobody heard of. So by creating the facilities on the St. Pete Pier, it gives us that chance to showcase to the public and to tourists in our area what we've been able to do here in Tampa Bay. And it's really helped to provide that opportunity to the community for Tampa Bay Watch.
Wow. You said it. I couldn't have explained it better. Yeah, that's incredible. I think, you know, just experiencing having a conversation with you, you know, a little less than a month ago about Tampa Bay Watch, and then going and experiencing the Discovery Center myself, and then also just being an outdoorsman and being on the water, you know, my day in and day out. It's so crucial to see the environment that we aim to protect with your own two eyes. And so having, you know, these eco tours, these snorkel trips, and an opportunity to go and experience that for yourselves is so much more than, you know, sitting on the couch and watching something about it. It's like you said earlier, mobilizing the community and the youth to experience it firsthand, because even though it's in our backyard, not many people know, you know, not many people know. And I think that's our efforts here with Wildscape, is to help showcase organizations like Tampa Bay Watch. So they're not the best unknown, you know, nonprofit. We definitely want to be able to help push you into the light. And with that being said, I think it goes hand in hand with, you know, your nomination of Tampa Bay into the EPA's National Estuary Program. Can you kind of tell the public what that means and what kind of award and the work that has gone into that?
So that was done when I worked for the Agency on Bay Management right before Tampa Bay Watch got started. But the EPA created a national program to help energize local estuaries and for them to create long-term management plans. And at the time, I think there were 7 or 8 estuaries around the country, including Sarasota Bay. And we made the case to EPA that we already had an organization that was working on the long-term management of Tampa Bay. So it wouldn't take as much effort or money to get us down the pipeline if Tampa Bay was included in the estuary program. And not only that, but Congressman Bill Young at the time put money into EPA's budget to get Tampa Bay included in the National Estuary Program. So I believe it was about 1990, EPA agreed, of course they had the money by then, and included Tampa Bay in the National Estuary Program. So now we have Tampa Bay Watch, which is an environmental nonprofit. We have the Tampa Bay Regional Planning Council Agency on Bay Management, which is a regional body that works to bring people together to discuss the issues in Tampa Bay. And we have the Tampa Bay Estuary Program, which is a federal umbrella on a national scale, but has a local Tampa Bay Estuary Program office that's charged with the long-term management of the bay. And they also help to focus restoration dollars in the bay. And when I say restoration, that's more than just habitat. That includes water quality funding, circulation, other types of research needs that we have in the bay. So we you know, part of our success is that we all have been working together for a long, long time. We all know each other. And because of that, we have this great communication between the different agencies, and we're not really tripping over each other. We know that if we want to go do something, we know what the local partners are that we need to work with in order to get those done. And there's really not a lot of other coastal bodies that are able to say that we've been communicating with each other as long as Tampa Bay has. There are a few, like Chesapeake Bay, San Francisco Bay, Long Island Sound, those kind of groups. But that's what makes a really strong management framework for a coastal body of water, is having a wide variety of groups that understand each other's roles, that are financed, and that are willing to work together in order to get the goals of the water body accomplished by working together.
It's amazing how many organizations are all tied together into estuary health, and especially just in the Tampa Bay area alone. And it sounds like it takes quite the group of people to be able to make it happen. I know you guys have just recently experienced kind of a boom in employees, and I'm assuming that has to do, you know, with funding, with projects that you have on hand. Let's talk about the employee expansion that you've had here.
Yeah, I remember when I had to move out of the house so I could employ or hire employee number two. And for many years, we would hire about a person a year. 3 years ago, we were up to about 22 employees. And with the opening of the Discovery Center and the launching of our eco vessel in downtown St. Petersburg, plus we're also starting to do a lot of educational outreach with a van, so that schools that may not be able to come to one of our two facilities, we have an outreach vehicle that can go out to them and run programs. So literally in the last 3 years, we've gone from about 22 employees to 62 employees to be able to accommodate that level of growth that we've had. You know, the pandemic was an incredible time. We opened the Discovery Center right in the middle of the pandemic, the very first year. And, you know, of course, that hurt our numbers, but it also gave us the opportunity to really kind of focus in on what our program needs were at the time, and being able to ramp up a lot of the other new programs as well, so that when we were able to get out of the COVID pipeline, we were ready and able in order to accommodate people that were coming out of, you know, their houses and finally starting to get back to life again. So 62 is certainly a tremendous amount, but that really helps to give us the capacity to do what we need to do here in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, expanding a team isn't easy. And on top of that, expanding it during a pandemic, along with opening a Discovery Center, that's phenomenal. First of all, props to you guys for being able to do that. And it's seemingly, you know, being done the right way. And then secondly, what's kind of cool about, you know, the pandemic, as much as you can say that without, you know, upsetting people, because I think there were, you know, things that came to light during the pandemic that were very beneficial to people, but allowing for the Discovery Channel, my gosh, the Discovery Center, to have that time to kind of prepare and understand almost like its place in the pier, and you guys have a full understanding of how it would operate during that first year of COVID, I think is almost a benefit for scaling purposes, because now I haven't had the time or the chance to be able to go there. I think that'll happen relatively soon. But it seems like it's been a pretty successful venture for you guys, not only, you know, from a local impact standpoint, but also from a knowledge standpoint. You know, people are starting to really get to know you.
Yeah, very true. And it's wonderful to have a facility where if we're talking to people about what's going on in Tampa Bay, we can bring them down to Discovery Center and walk through a historical perspective on the spin browser of where we were in the late 1800s to where we are now. We can see things like the wave of plastic that Koji talked about that has 5,000 water bottles, which is literally 1 second of the United States water bottle use on average in a single second of time. It's incredible. Two other things like live animals in the touch tank and the snake exhibit. And we're also working on new and improved exhibits that like the living shorelines that kind of showcase some of our different restoration projects as well.
Yeah, well, that's actually, thank you for doing all the hard work for me on the transition portion of things. Let's talk about your current projects that you have going on.
We are at an interesting point in the Tampa Bay estuary. For many, many years, we talked about the success in Tampa Bay. Water quality, we were seeing water quality improvement back to 1950 levels. And because of that, seagrasses were responding to good water quality. And they also have come back to what our goals were in the Bay, about 42,000 acres. But in the last 6 years, we're starting to see a decline in water quality in seagrass. And we're a little concerned. We've lost about 30% of our seagrass populations in Tampa Bay compared to where we were 6 years ago. If you look at Indian River Lagoon, they've lost about 60% of their seagrass beds, and they had a catastrophic collapse, excuse me, a few years ago. So we're concerned. We see the downward slide of our seagrass populations, and we don't know where the bottom is. So there's a lot of efforts that are going on right now to try to address what is going on in the Bay and why we're seeing these water quality degradations going on in the Bay. And then Tampa Bay, internally, we need to look at what our programs are and how we're implementing them and see what we need to do in order to get back on track in the Bay. So historically, historically, we've done these community-based projects with our community groups and kids. But in the future, we may need to look at larger scale projects that are done with engineers and heavy equipment in order to create larger habitat efforts, because scale is everything. Size matters. The size of your oyster beds help to drive water quality in the Bay. So we do need to scale up. So we're looking at other places in the Bay where we're able to do that. And we're also working with a lot of the different local governments in order to design the next phase of these projects.
Yeah, that's interesting that you mentioned the scalability of, you know, starting out small with something like a vertical oyster garden, which if you go to the Tampa Bay Discovery Center, you can see you can bring your own vertical oyster garden home. But no, starting off with something that, you know, is something that you can bring home and do yourself and hang off your own dock, to, like you said, getting bigger organizations involved and raising the funding to be able to say, hey, we need to put in a few acres of oyster beds. When it comes down to that scale of a project, I'm sure, you know, it takes so much more moving parts. And I'm so unfamiliar with, you know, the start and the finish of that project. What does it usually look like for you to, I know it's not just Tampa Bay Watch that's saying, hey, we want to build an oyster reef here or start an oyster reef here. Are there other organizations that help out? And, you know, what does it look like to get that project started and funded?
Yeah, I'll tell you two different examples. One of our wonderful partners is National Audubon Society, and they manage a lot of islands around Tampa Bay for birds and other wildlife. They've experienced a lot of erosion on these islands, and historically they'll come to Tampa Bay Watch and ask us to help stabilize the bird islands. So what we'll do is we'll go out and do an ecological survey and see how we can build in these living shorelines around these Audubon islands. And what we've learned to do is we don't just plant salt marsh or we don't just build an oyster bar. We've learned that we have to create these different zones around the island that look like very much that Mother Nature would want to do so that we can create these living shorelines. Out in front, if there's a high erosion, we'll put in these oyster reef balls. These are marine-friendly concrete domes that stand up about 18 inches off the bottom. And when you put them in rows about five wide across the front of an area, they're very, very good at tripping these waves before they come ashore. And the added benefit of the domes is that they grow oysters on top of them so that they are out there filtering the water. So it provides a little bit of a breakwater, but it's also a natural filter. And then behind the reef balls, we build our oyster shell bars, which are made out of oyster shell mesh bags that we lay along the bottom, and the oysters grow on top of them. And after a couple of years, they look like a very, very natural oyster bar out in the bay. And then behind that, we'll plant salt marsh. So it's literally different steps of resources that we build in order to protect those islands in the long term. And by doing that, it stabilizes the island so that Audubon can have their wildlife and bird nesting islands that they need out in the bay. So we've been doing that for decades out in the bay with Audubon as one partner. You know, the city of St. Petersburg just recently brought us to one of their parks and showed us some of the erosion that was going on at Lassing Park. And we created the same type of scenario where it was reef balls out in front, shell bars in the middle, and then salt marsh behind that. It's about 900 oyster domes or reef balls, I'm sorry, in the front side. I think about 100 tons of oyster shell, and then tens of thousands of salt marsh that we plant behind it. And that'll stabilize the park, so the park no longer has to maintain that eroding shoreline. It helps to create more parkland by stabilizing it for the local residents. Plus, it provides an environmental, natural environmental filter and habitat conditions back into the Tampa Bay estuary. So that's what we do. We work with our partners quite often, local governments or other nonprofits, will identify a need, and then we'll use our professional staff to go out and document and determine what type of natural solution we can create along that shoreline.
It's just a lot of good things happening with one project. You know, like you said, it's not just creating, you know, a breakwater and oyster, you know, a place for oysters to grow, but it's also thinking about the salt marsh behind it and filtering water. You're literally killing like 10 birds with one stone.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you're educating the volunteers that help out.
Right. And it's cheaper than building a seawall in that location.
Speaking to those decades of work and experience, I kind of want to shift the show into our favorite part, the part that the public loves to hear. And these are stories. Perhaps wild stories of which that you haven't told or may have told around a fire, you know, maybe over some whiskey. What are some things out here that you've experienced, whether it be on a project, research, anything that is just so outlandish or not that you'd like to share?
So I knew this was coming up, and I bounced a couple ideas off my wife this morning to see what would float. And she says, whatever you do, don't tell your shark stories. So,
oh, well, now we got to hear the shark stories.
She didn't want me to scare too many volunteers away. So I thought what I'd do is tell you one of my alligator stories, and we'll go from there.
Oh, even better.
There was this area up in Feather Sound, and anybody that's familiar with the Feather Sound golf course is also knows that they can grow some really big alligators up there. I have seen multiple 12 footers, if not bigger, big logs laying on the side of some of the golf course areas in spoil mounds back there. So we were looking at a restoration project with Pinellas County and others one day. And there was this gentleman that I'd never met before. He worked for Fish and Wildlife Service, and he was there for the site visit. And we were walking around the property and a group started to walk one way. And I knew there was this little creek that ran through the area called Grassy Creek. And I love creeks. I love tributaries to the bay. They're so vitally important. And I hadn't seen this one. So I really wanted to get down and walk up the creek and meet everyone else at the other side that we knew where the creek was going. So the fish and wildlife gentleman, I wish I remember his name, he walked down the trail with me and we jump in this creek and we start walking up. And it was just a little bit of bushes to start. And then the mangroves started taking over and the creek started to turn into mud and it got wide and it got deeper and it got darker and it got deeper and it got darker as we're walking along. And pretty soon we're at that point of no return where you're pretty sure where you wanted to go was right around the next corner. But you didn't want to go back. You wanted to get out of there as quick as possible. The mangroves were all over the top of us. And we started to look over to the side of the banks and there was these alligator crawls coming in and out of the creek. So at that point, we're up to our neck in water, walking through the mud in the dark, looking at alligator trails. And we both knew how big these alligators were in that area. And I was just waiting for one of us to get dragged underneath the water. And we were lucky. We obviously didn't see anyone that day. But if ever there was an opportunity for me to get munched by Mother Nature, that certainly was one of the opportune times.
That's called neck deep in the mud.
Munched by an alligator. But there is one other story that I wanted to talk about, and we kind of talked about it when we were talking about the school kids and the Title I kids. And this was a group of high school kids that were helping us out building Oyster Bar in Hillsborough County one day. There was a program over there called Youth Environmental Services, and they would have these kids that had gotten into trouble. But these were good kids, but they didn't want to incarcerate them. So this was kind of their last chance to go through this program. And Youth Environmental Services would get them involved with environmental projects as well as provide them with a high school education at the same time. But these are pretty tough kids. I mean, they were locked up at night, and this was a good opportunity for them. So the kids that came down to help us out with this oyster project this one day, they were wonderful. They were very polite. They worked really hard, but they were also very, very quiet. They didn't talk a lot to each other. They didn't necessarily talk a lot with the organizers of it, but they were really a big help building this oyster bar out at a place called Whiskey Stump Key. So these guys were shoveling shell the whole day. And at the end of the day, they worked so hard. We got the reef done early. So we loaded up all these kids in our Carolina skiffs and we were driving them down so we could show them the fruits of their labor. We could show them the oyster bar that we'd built. And once we got on the boat, you know, most of these kids had never been on a boat before. And we're driving along through this idle speed zone. And one of them in the back was dragging his hand through the water, and he was just enjoying it. He was just loving being on the boat. And he picks his hand up, and he looks over at his friend next to him, and he goes, "I can't wait to tell my mother what I did today." And that made such a huge impression to me. I mean, he could have said all kinds of things, but wanting to go back and share this with his family really was very impressive. And it's those kinds of experience that really help to drive us and energize us to get the community involved with our restoration projects. It was very cool.
Oh yeah. That's incredible. And that's why we do it, you know, is to show others and give others that experience of, you know, at one point you were that little kid that couldn't wait to tell others about what you experienced.
Very true. I don't know if I would have told my mother, but I tell her now about all the great things that we do.
It's funny you mentioned Whiskey Stump Key. I was there about 2 weeks ago, and I was there on my paddleboard, and I saw firsthand the oyster domes underwater. And I actually snagged a lure underneath, which I got back. But it was incredible to see how many mangrove snapper in Sheepshead were just abundant on this key. And, you know, paddling around the whole area, it's right next to the Mosaic, which is a big, like what do they do? They create like phosphate or
it's a big phosphate fertilizer company. Yes. And it's also right next to the Tico Big Bend power plant too. Mosaic's actually helped to clean up the Piney Point facility by removing a lot of the water off the top of that stack. And also, since they have a lot of experience with gyp stacks, you know, they help to provide some science to closing off that gyp stack.
That area is always just so finicky. I mean, there's like the Rock Ponds Estuary, there's Port Manatee, which we just had a massive oil spill.
Yeah.
Breaks my heart seeing that. As of this week, new developments, massive oil spill in Tampa Bay. And man, it seems like we just can't catch a break here, you know? It's always something.
It's very true. It's like three steps forward, two steps back in many cases.
Yeah. But like, fortunately, there are organizations like Tampa Bay Watch that are directly combating that. So we're thankful to have you on the show and to be able to share these experiences and those wild stories. I mean, we're thankful that you didn't get chomped either by a 12-footer because, man, Feather Sound is literally a 5-minute drive from me. I'm not too far from there. And I've walked to those ponds and have seen the big gators.
You know the alligators then, yeah.
You telling me about walking into Grassy Creek. I'm like, this man loves his work that much that he's going to walk neck deep in the mud. That's, man, I salute you to that. So
I could have used a paddleboard that day.
Right. Even then it's questionable being on the surface of the water and in muddy water. It's, you know, not the smartest.
Well, I think that's a good point to go into the last little bit that we have for the show. And that's basically allowing you to tell our audience how to connect with you guys. How does our audience get involved and how do they reach out to you guys?
That's great, Ethan. Thank you. The best way to do it is to go to our website and sign up for our e-blast that we send out every week. And it not only talks about the different restoration projects that we have here, opportunities at the Discovery Center, but it also talks about what other organizations are out there doing like-minded work as well. And it also talks about some of our different ways to support our organization, whether it's through donations and membership or our special events that we host throughout the year. But our website is tampabaywatch.org. And we do send out different information each and every week. So that's a great way to stay in touch with not only what Tampa Bay Watch is doing, but other organizations as well in our region. And please come out, volunteer for Tampa Bay Watch. We talk a lot about our salt marsh and our oyster works, but there's a lot of different things that people can do to participate and take a hands-on role in the bay. They can volunteer at the Discovery Center and be one of our docents down there. They can help protect the bird colonies by removing monofilament fishing line or collecting fishing line from our collection containers that we have at fishing piers and things like that. We do the Great Bay Scallop Search each and every year, which is very, very popular. Koji mentioned about our vertical oyster gardens. People want our oyster domes, but they don't want to get a permit to install them. So what we do is we designed our vertical oyster gardens for people to hang off the dock. And these grow oysters, and they provide a certain amount of water quality and habitat benefit to the bay. And you don't need a permit for them, and they're free, and we give them away. And our volunteers build them so that we can give them away for free. So that's another great opportunity. And I think once you go to the website, you'll see such a wide variety. You may not want to pour concrete, but you may want to protect the bird colonies. And we do all those different kind of wide variety of different activities. Truly, our volunteers are the lifeblood of our organization.
Speaking of volunteers, you will see a few of the Wildscape team members at a few of these volunteer opportunities throughout the rest of the year. I know there's one right around the corner on September 16th, the International Coastal Cleanup, which we'll see you guys at if you're out there.
Sounds great. Look forward to it.
Amazing. Well, Peter, today has been an incredible show. It's been a fun episode. It's been really refreshing to dive into you and your history and the background of Tampa Bay Watch and all of the intentions moving forward. So thank you for sharing all of this information. And if there's anything else you want to say to the audience out there, feel free to. But if not, then that's it for the show.
Well, thank you. No, I do appreciate the opportunity. And again, people want to help out. They truly want to do the right thing and they want to get involved. And there are a lot of wonderful programs just like Tampa Bay Watch. And if it's not us, it's somebody else in your community. And we need your help. We can't do it without you. So I appreciate the opportunity, Koji and Ethan, to come on your podcast today, talk about the Tampa Bay Watch program, and hopefully get some more people involved with restoring and protecting the Bay every day.
That's awesome. We're so happy to have you, Peter.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Wild and Unprotected Podcast, brought to you by Wildscape Productions. Follow us on social media at Wildscape Productions. For more information on our documentary series, Shoreline Stories, visit wildscapeproduction.com. Stay tuned for our future episodes, as we have so much more in store for Wild and Unprotected.